Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Jaya Kumar, Abiyaz Karim, and Henry Walker. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. The Kingston Canadian Film Festival is returning for their 25th year with more local films on the docket than ever before. KCFF 2025 will present five Made in Kingston films, the most ever, at the festival next month, in addition to eight short films produced through their local shorts program. This will also mark the world premiere for many of these films. This comes as Kingston's film sector is potentially on the cusp of some major growth. Ambitious actors in Kingston's film scene have been pioneering a new era, which includes an emphasis on homegrown start-to-finish productions and possibly a brand new film studio in town for this purpose before the year is up. Festival director Mark Garness spoke with CFRC about this year's elevated local film presence. This is the most local films to be featured at KCFF. I was wondering if you could speak to that and what it says about Kingston's film industry.
Yeah, well, I think when I started, my first year at the festival was 2000, and I started in 2012. My first festival was 2013, and we didn't have any local features that year, and it was in those early days for me, it was very rare to even see a local feature. We would maybe get one like every other year type thing, but we had a local shorts program, which that's been here for 25 years, and it's always been a really strong program. Oftentimes, it's a lot of film students at Queen's creating those films, but one thing I've noticed is just more filmmakers living here year round and in the community making films. So I think like through Queen's, there's always been a strong output of short films, but now we're seeing more shorts being created by people in the community. And then also the big thing I'm noticing is more features now. So like this year we have, I think we have four locally produced features. And last year, I think we had three. So now it seems like year in, year out, we have a few features being made by Kingstonians, which was something I didn't see in my early days.
Mm-hmm. And has it been a kind of like a slow progression to get here, did you find, or was there kind of a big boom of local filmmaking?
Yeah, I would say it was more gradual. Like, I think when I started, it was just like, yeah, like I said, it was very rare to see a local feature. And then, I don't know, one year we maybe had two, and then one year we had three. And so it's kind of been gradual. And Kingston had its, got a film office. I think it was in 2019, so that certainly helped, and Alex was the original film officer as well, so and he's maintains a close connection to the festival to this day and has been on the board and was the early director as well, so I know he's when he was in that role was always looking up for the festival as well. So yeah, I think now with more supports in place like the film office and then I think also locals knowing that there is a exhibition space for their films if they do create one, like knowing that KCFF will play them, I think is both those things have led to a higher output.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and it's the 25th anniversary. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to the festival's growth and how that's kind of coincided or had a relationship with our local film industry growth till now.
Yeah, like it's so every year I've been with the festival, like other than the pandemic years, which just is not really a comparable, but every like I guess non-compromised festival has grown in attendance, and you know, just tying it back to the local stuff, I think anytime you can include a local film or more local talent in the lineup, it's bringing in people that may not show up otherwise. So, you know, for example, like we have an 18 millimeter program, which is youth filmmakers, and you know, they're bringing a mom and dad and brother and sister and friends and family that are there to support their kid, and they are often coming to the festival for the first time through that path. And then I think once they're there, they're like, oh, there's a lot more to this festival than I realized, and you know, maybe I'll go check out another film. So it's been, I think, including some of the local productions has been a way to, provide a new point of entry into the festival for some people who've maybe known about it but have never actually taken a chance on it. So that's not why we do it, to grow the festival. We do it to support the local filmmakers, but it is a nice byproduct of including more local, is that I think our core audience does grow.
Garnes also included one of the local films in his highlights for this upcoming festival.
It's a tie between many things, but I would say Single Woman Seeking Child is one that I'm excited for, but also proud of. We had a 25th anniversary contest last year. It was a script reading contest where we had five people do live pitches in front of a jury, and Blaine Waters was the filmmaker who won. So we helped fund his new short film that's going to be playing at the festival this year. And yeah, it was all shot in Kingston. So you'll see like lots of downtown familiar landmarks, and it's a story about his family and him growing up here. And it's only 15 minutes, but he nailed it. It's amazing. It's got like the arc of like a full 90 minute feature film. I don't know if his intention is to make it into a feature or not. Like, it's pretty hot off the press. Yeah, I know he's bringing his family over to the premiere at the festival. And so, yeah, it was just nice to be involved in it, going back to last festival and knowing that we had a hand in bringing this to life by funding it and then now premiering it at the festival. So I guess if I was forced to pick one, that would be the one I'm looking most forward to.
Once again, that was Mark Garnes, Executive Director of the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, on this year's record number of local productions being featured. In the final hour of the city's 2025 budget review process on Wednesday night, Councillor Gregory Ridge put forward an amendment to the municipal operating budget to pull $200,000 from the city's working fund reserve to fund food programs. This comes just over a week after Council's decision to declare food insecurity an emergency in Kingston, with one in three households in the region experiencing food insecurity. Capping off three nights of budget presentations, Councillor Ridge kept his case brief.
I think that this is a targeted measure that will help to address some of the potential anxiety that organizations like, for example, the Food Bank or St. Vincent de Paul have with regards to the growing use of their services and providing food and helping people in that way. And I think that this is, it's targeted. I think it's something that we can do relatively easily.
Councillor Brandon Tozo, who brought forward the motion to declare food insecurity an emergency last week and seconded Ridge's amendment, also spoke to the challenge Kingston is facing.
I want to speak something from the heart, and that is that the needs of our community are not going to get solved here from the big structural issues that we have in Kingston. A year ago, we put $1 million towards attracting doctors, which is a provincial responsibility. We're putting $200,000 to helping feed people. We're not going to solve it. These are just different types of Band-Aid solutions that we are putting forward. And I really wish all of what we were talking about as a city council was things like roads, things like parks, things like infrastructure. And we're going again and again and trying to solve the problems of upper levels of government. And it's frustrating we can't, but we have to do something. We can't just let these big social issues keep festering and not try to do what we can at our level to try to solve it.
With this one-time contribution coming from the city's reserve funds, it will not have an impact on taxes for Kingston residents. While all councillors were in support, Councillor Connie Glenn offered some words of caution before the motion passed.
I just want to make sure that what we do moving forward is about solutions. So I know that part of what's coming back are some long-term solutions so that we aren't simply putting Band-Aids over things. Yes, the other levels of government have to step up, but we also, I think, have to wisely spend the money to find sustainable solutions to this situation. So I want to make sure that we're doing that and not simply coming back and continuing to have to do this. There are options, there are things that I think we can advance, but we have limited resources, so we have to be very thoughtful about how we go about doing this. So that's my only caution as we pull more money from reserve funds. We've done it frequently we're in difficult times, but if we deplete reserve funds, then what ends up happening is we have nothing left when a true pandemic or something hits and we really need that extra bit.
City staff will report back to council by April with the proposed allocation of these funds. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Abiyaz with the latest in campus news.
Thank you. Good evening, folks. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC News, and you are listening to our segment, Campus Corner, where we bring you the latest updates and events happening at Queen's University. This week, the campus is buzzing with opportunities for students to jumpstart their career, enhance their well-being, and make a difference through student elections. Let's dive into the details. First, the Summer and Part-Time Job Opportunities Fair is set to take place on Tuesday, January 28th, from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. in Gym 3 at Mitchell Hall. This event is perfect for students seeking summer opportunities or part-time positions during the academic year. Attendees will have the chance to explore diverse job opportunities, network with potential employers, and receive career advices. The fair also features on-site resume review service and one-on-one career coaching to help students stand out in the competitive job market. While registration isn't mandatory, but signing up on My Career is highly recommended to stay informed on updates and notifications. Next, the Engineering and Technology Career Fair will follow on Wednesday, January 29 during the same hours in the same venue. It is tailored for students in engineering, computing, and technology. This event brings representatives from leading companies and organizations to discuss career paths, internships, and job prospects. Students can also visit the Career and Resume Advising Cafe for professional advice on resume writing, career strategies, and interview preparation. To make the most of the event, attendants are encouraged to review the Career Fair checklist and read the exhibitor guide. Prepare multiple copies of your resume. Professional attire and name tags are also recommended for a strong first impression. As the previous fair, registration is optional but encouraged through My Career. In addition to the career fairs, student elections are a major highlight this week. Queen's student will have the opportunity to elect new student leaders and vote on significant student fees. Voting lines will be open from January 29 to 30th through the Secure Simply Voting platform. Undergraduate students can vote at queensams.simplyvoting.com, while graduate students can cast their votes at sgps.simplyvoting.com. These elections are a chance for students to have their voices heard and influence the direction of student initiatives and projects. Big things going on in Queen's campus this week. Lastly, if you feel that you'll be burned out with all these happening in campus this week, we can shift your focus to well-being. Don't miss the Preventing and Managing Burnout workshop, part of the Thrive 365 initiative. This session will take place on Wednesday, January 29th from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. in Mitchell Hall, room 101. The workshop is designed to help students identify the signs of burnt out and develop strategies for managing stress effectively. It's a great opportunity to learn practical tools for maintaining mental and emotional health during the academic year. Registration is free and open to all students. This week offers incredible opportunities for students. Whether you're looking to advance your career, enhance your well-being, or make an impact through your vote, don't miss out. That's all for today from Queen's campus. Stay tuned for more updates from Jaya on Wednesday. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC News, and you were listening to our segment, Campus Corner. Over to Isabella for Sports After.
Hello, CFRC listeners. I'm Isabella Garrido, and welcome to the CFRC Sports Desk. Let's dive into the latest action from Queen's University Athletics. Women's hockey delivered a back-to-back win over the Ontario Tech Ridgebacks this weekend. After a 3-1 home victory on Friday, the Gales hit the road to Oshawa and secured a 2-1 win on Saturday. Despite a scoreless first period, goalie Emma Tennant stood strong against the Ridgebacks' early efforts in the second. Queens broke through late in the second with Sophie Hudson netting a power play goal, assisted by Karis Cawley. Sophie Aldred added another goal in the third, breaking away from the defense and finding the back of the net. The Ridgebacks managed a power play goal of their own, but the Gales held on for the win, improving their record to 7-13. They'll face Ottawa next on January 30th at 7 p.m. As for the men's hockey team, they kept their momentum alive with a gritty 3-1 win over the McGill Redbirds at the Memorial Center. Daron Kapp opened the scoring early in the second period, jamming home a loose puck, and Daniel Michaud added a stunning coast-to-coast goal, doubling the lead. Though McGill managed a late shorthanded goal, Nolan Hutchinson sealed the deal with his league-leading 17th goal of the season. With the victory, Queens improves to 18-5, staying in contention for the top spot in the OUA East Division. Their next game is against Guelph Griffins on February 1st, followed by the historic Carr-Harris Cup against RMC on February 7th. Don't miss it. Switching on over to basketball, the women's team pulled off a thrilling comeback to defeat the Brock Badgers 63-59. Down for most of the game, the Gales found their spark in the fourth quarter, led by Michaela McFarlane, who scored 7 of her 11 points in the final stretch. Katrina Rennan and Brooke Hussey combined for 32 points, keeping the Gales within striking distance throughout the match. Rennan's clutch three-pointer gave Queens their first lead of the game, and Hussey iced the victory with late free throws. The Gales will face Ottawa as well on January 31st at 6 p.m. Finally, our men's basketball team saw their 14-game winning streak snapped in a heartbreaker, falling 102-100 to Brock. Despite trailing for most of the game, the Gales nearly pulled off a comeback in the fourth quarter. Luca Silas led Queens with 24 points, while Ollie Engine and Kai Dalen added 19 and 16 points, respectively. The Gales remain at the top of the OUA East and look to bounce back in their next game. That's all for today's Queen's Sports Roundup. Stay tuned for more updates and don't forget to catch these games live on OUA.tv or in person. Go Gales! This has been Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Jesse with the breaking news update.
After an incredible, record-setting season, Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersma is poised to make history. The 6'5" senior starter from London, Ontario, put up gaudy numbers as he led the Laurier Golden Hawks to their first Yates Cup victory since 2016. In 8 regular season games, Elgersma completed 75% of his passes for over 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns. This led to Elgersma being named the OUA MVP, the second consecutive year he was awarded that honor. He followed up his great regular season with a superb playoff run that saw him throw for over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns in just 3 games. Elgersma would lead Laurier to an 11-1 record and win the Heck Crichton Trophy, awarded to the country's top football player. Elgersma does have 1 year of OUA eligibility remaining, but it seems likely that he will be playing professionally in the near future. Elgersma is ranked 20th in the 2025 CFL Draft Rankings, the 9th highest rated U Sports player. The CFL is not the only professional league inquiring about the Golden Hawks signal caller's services, however. Elgersma is now the first U Sports quarterback to ever be invited to the NCAA's Senior Bowl, a game designed to shine a spotlight on top-tier draft-eligible players. Elgersma would be just the second Canadian quarterback to ever attend the Senior Bowl, and the first since Mark Rippon, who played Division I football at Washington State nearly 40 years prior. Elgersma has reportedly been interviewed by multiple NFL teams, including the Miami Dolphins, New York Giants, San Francisco 49ers, Indianapolis Colts, and Los Angeles Chargers. Only one U Sports quarterback has ever been selected in the NFL draft, University of Toronto standout Dan Faraday, who was taken in the 12th round of the 1982 draft by the Cincinnati Bengals. If 2024 was Elgersma's final year in the OUA, he would end his career with a record of 29-9, 2 OUA MVP awards, a Heck Crichton Trophy, over 10,000 passing yards, 72 passing touchdowns, and another 18 rushing touchdowns. Elgersma reports for practice on Tuesday, January 28th in Mobile, Alabama. The 2025 Senior Bowl takes place on Saturday, February 1st at 2:30 p.m. and will be broadcast live on the NFL Network. Elgersma has been to Mobile before, training at Quarterback Country with draft picks Drake May and Bo Nix last offseason.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. The period of intense cold appears to be over, at least for the time being, as Monday, January 27th saw a daytime high of 0 and a 40% chance of flurries throughout the day, dropping down to minus 10 overnight. Tuesday, January 28th, we're going to see a daytime high of minus 6 and a 60% chance of flurries, dropping down 2 degrees to minus 8 overnight. Wednesday, January 29th, it's going to be hovering around 0, daytime high of minus 1 and a 60% chance of flurries. However, the temperature will drop off exponentially overnight, hitting a nighttime low of minus 16. Thursday, January 30th, we're going to see a daytime high of minus 11 with a 30% chance of flurries throughout the day, a mix of sun and cloud otherwise, and that drops down 10 degrees overnight to a frigid minus 21. Friday, January 31st, we will see sunny conditions, but it still will be cold with a daytime high of minus 11. Saturday, February 1st, we're going to see a daytime high of 2 degrees, dropping down to minus 11 overnight. Sunday, February 2nd, we'll see a high of 4 degrees with a 45% chance of precipitation. And then Monday, February 3rd, we'll see a daytime high of 3 with a low around the 0 mark. This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, January 27th, 2025. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles and Edwin to Princess expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard at Elmwood, expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road.
Hello, I'm Henry Walker, CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History. Here's today's concert and events calendar. Starting with events, coming up on Monday, the city will be hosting the Mayor's Arts Awards at City Hall, starting at 6:30 p.m. Attendance is free for those interested. The Kingston Frontenac Public Library will be running a public craft and makerspace session from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Also on Monday, Riverhead Brewing Company will be hosting their Logger and Joggers running group, with their run starting at 5:30 p.m. On Tuesday, Queen's Summer and Part-Time Job Fair is happening in Mitchell Hall from 10:30 to 3:30. The Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 to 4:00 p.m. at Springer Market Square. Also, the Tet will be featuring works by its 2024 residency artists in a showcase titled Beyond Boundaries. The gallery will be open at 12, with an opening reception at 5:30 p.m. Later on Wednesday, to celebrate the Lunar New Year, a public dragon dance will be taking place on Sydenham Street near City Hall at 4. The Kingston Frontenac Public Library Rideau Heights branch is running a cooking workshop focused on helping reduce food waste and making the most of your ingredients. The free course, One Earth, starts at 6 p.m. The Queen's Winter Engineering and Technology Fair is also taking place on Wednesday from 10:30 to 8:30 in Mitchell Hall. On Thursday, the Reel Out Film Festival opens at 8 p.m. with the Drag Goes to the Movies opening gala party. Tickets for the evening are available online for $25. Reel Out continues with screenings every day till February 8th. The Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 to 4:00 p.m. in Springer Market Square. The play Sharing is Caring opens Thursday at The Spire. The play explores themes of friendship, secrets, and the shifting dynamics of relationships on a Halloween night gone awry. Tickets are available online for $16.30, with doors opening at 7. Additional performances will continue till Sunday. On Friday, the Buckle and Daft Brewing will both be hosting their weekly free karaoke nights. Doors open at 9. On Saturday, the Spirit of Winter Festival starts with an opening ceremony in Springer Market Square from 6:15 to 7:00 p.m. The Kingston Public Market also runs in Springer Market Square from 8:30 to 4:00 p.m. On Sunday morning, the Runner's Choice Lawn Run starts downtown outside their store at 8:20 a.m. All ages and paces are welcome. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 1 p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Again, I'm Henry Walker, CFRC intern from the Department of History. We're continuing with today's concert and events calendar. For concerts, coming up on Monday, Inner Harbor Jazz will be playing at the RCHA in the afternoon around 4:30. There's a cover of $5. The Morning Dubs will also be playing some jazz and funk grooves at a free show at Musiki starting at 7. On Tuesday, Musiki will be hosting their weekly open mic, also starting at 7. And, as always, Tom's Tuesday Happy Hour Jam will be taking place at the RCHA from 4 to 7. On Wednesday, $5 Dates will be playing some rock and country at Spearhead Brewery from 7 to 10. The Fiercely OK Singing Community also meets on Wednesday at 7 p.m, this time at Chalmers United Church. Learn simple, nourishing songs by ear in a welcoming, no-pressure setting, $20, or pay what you can. Also on Wednesday, Frank Ryan will be playing a free set at Musiki from 8 to 11. On Thursday, the acclaimed cellist Nicholas Alstead will be performing alongside pianist Fazil Say at the Isabel from 7:30 to 9:30. Tickets are available online ranging from $15 to $72. Also, Beats Workin will be performing at the RCHA starting at 7. There's a $5 cover charge. On Thursday, Kingston-based musician Taryn McKenna will be playing a free gig at the Grizzly at 8. On Friday, the Toucan will be hosting the Boo Radley Project for a free night of genre-bending funk, indie, and jazz. The Celtic Kitchen Party also will be playing, starting at 9, at Tiernanog. Also on Friday, the Kingston-based singer-songwriter Alex Mundy will be performing at the Isabel starting at 8 p.m. Tickets are available online for $20. Folks can also head over to the Royal Tavern 2.0 to catch Soul to Squeeze performing some old-school rock tunes for free around 9. On Saturday, the internationally known ukulele player Jake Shimabukuro will be performing at the Kingston Grand. The performance, tickets for which are available online ranging from $7.50 to $45.50, will be starting at 7:30 p.m. Also on Saturday, the band Hat Trick will be playing a gig at the RCHA from 8 to 11 with a $5 cover. Bands The Empties and The Backsteps, alongside musician Quentin Cofftree, will be playing a concert at the Broom Factory. Doors open at 7 with tickets available for $17.31. On Sunday, Danny Daru will again be performing a mix of rock and country at the Caesar Company from 6 to 9 p.m. This is a free event. And finally, Savannah Shea will be performing at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 4 to 6, again for free. Have a concert you would like to add to our online and on-air concert calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.